Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, get ready for a bunch of these stories to start just flooding out. But this one grabbed my attention. Evidently, the guy who's the head of the American Conservative Union, this Matt Schlapp guy, he's also the guy who puts on the CPAC every year, the Conservative Political Action Conference. Evidently, this guy, Parker Pete Pettit, paid this guy $750,000 for 2 weeks worth of lobbying work with the direct thought that he was going to lobby Trump to give him a pardon. $750,000 to this guy. The pardon didn't happen, and I guess in this vein, good on Trump, because Pettit was a guy who, according to the Atlanta Constitution newspaper, the Journal Constitution, evidently he's facing up to 20 years in prison for securities fraud. Yeah. I hope he does all 20. I hope they give him 25 for bad behavior. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the big news of the day and maybe what crimes we will uncover going forward, our good friend, political analyst and former Congressman Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So do you think we'll see a lot of these stories? And look, I understand every term we have presidents who get something, you know, the appearance that they're getting something for pardons is always there. I just don't know that we're going to see to this extent anything like this throughout history.
Well, it happens. I think you're seeing, you know, more now, including the information that we know right at this point in time about Giuliani himself, who I don't know if he got the payment or he was trying to get the payment or what happened, but you know, when you see somebody that close to the president, if you've got a regular lobbyist, quote, and they're trying to do some work for somebody, they're probably not passing that money on. But then when you see them in the inner circle, you know, like Giuliani and others, it's obviously going to be bad or at least look bad.
Yeah, no, it looks terrible. But, you know, I look at Giuliani especially and go, you know, he was you know, super crime fighter at one point. He was America's mayor. How the high and mighty hath fallen.
Well, Rick, look, with Giuliani, which, you know, after 9/11, I, like most people in this country, really looked up to him, right? You know, everybody did, America's mayor. And then I lost confidence in him a long time back when he took, I can't remember if it was $100,000 or $150,000 early in his time to lobby for the MEK, Mojahedin Khalq, who were on the terror list. They were an official registered terrorist group, and he took the money to lobby to not have them an official terrorist group. And when he did that, I thought, okay, you know, money is his lord.
Yeah, well, how does he get away with that? I mean, you know, immediately my mind goes to this place, and we've talked about this before. How does he not get locked up for that? I mean,
Bolton too. Bolton gave speeches, but Giuliani, of all people, you know, you can't lobby for a registered. Now they're not on the terror list anymore, but they were, and you know, nobody went after him. I guess, you know, if you're in the barrel and they go after you, That's one thing, but nobody did. I mean, clear violation of the law.
Crazy.
Clear.
Just crazy. But, you know, we'll see where it takes us. I didn't have you on Inauguration Day. I wanted to get your thoughts of Joe Biden's speech.
Thought it was pretty good, and I think it's being recognized as pretty good. I have heard directly from some, you know, fairly conservative people that they thought it was a good speech. I think in general, you know, a lot of people felt that. And I thought the inaugural was handled pretty good, you know, with, you know, some of the effects and things they did, because it couldn't be, you know, like your regular normal inaugural day. And so I thought that they did a pretty decent job of putting everything together, you know, just the technical part of it. But the speech was good, and a lot of people seemed to have liked it.
Yeah, I my position was, you know, good. We got it out of the way, formality. Let's get to work, and he did right away. Day one, 10 executive orders today, a slew of executive orders. There's been a bunch of executive action to get us somewhere onto the path that the president would like to guide us.
Yes, and also, and I've had this question asked, well, how can he do this? Well, he is, for the most part, doing an executive order about something that Trump did an executive order over. So what he is doing didn't go through the system, quote, to the Congress itself. It never did. It was done by, you know, as presidents do, with executive orders. So everything he did, if it can be done by executive order, it can be undone by executive order.
Correct. So because I had asked the question, is there a way to go, you know what, everything Trump did, you know, we're just going to undo and put it back. We're going to have like a computer restart date. You just go, like, have you ever restarted your computer to an early date?
Sure.
It gives you the option to go pick a date. We go back to there. It's a restart. No, obviously you can't. But I guess the question then comes up of, you know, is there a moment in the near future where we go, okay, now we're going to stop with this executive order stuff, and we're going to actually get a functional Congress that in a moment of crisis is actually going to do their jobs?
Well, executive orders have been growing. You know, when I was there, as a Republican Congress, we used to argue amongst ourselves about President Bush, who was Republican, doing, you know, quote, too many executive orders. And then there's signing statements. We haven't even got into that. Nobody talks about signing statements.
Yeah, because no legislation passed during the last term.
Yeah, well, true. But signing statements, you know, where something passes and the president says, okay, I'm signing that bill, but I kind of don't like this. And it automatically, legally sends a signal to a cabinet member to not do what the Congress wanted, you know. But the executive orders, when people asked me this week, well, I thought there was going to be unity and he was going to seek Republican approval. Well, these were not orders, again, that were done through a Congress. And, by the way, he did keep, a few things that Trump had for the, you know, temporary moment. Tariffs, you know, with China, you know, for example. The look at the troops to be removed, the potential from Afghanistan. You know, so there were some things kept, and then there were some things that were reversed, the Paris Climate Accord and the Arctic, XL pipeline, and some different things like that. And I think, too, for the effect of it, you know, it shows that on opening day, he did the following things. If you remember going back to the contract with America, you know, Newt Gingrich, the opening day, you know, 15 things were done on the opening day. So, I mean, it was a good strategy if you're going to do it. It's not like you go into the White House and they say, well, what did Biden do this week? You know, right there, that was the first thing he did. So it makes an impact.
No, it's like, you know, the sure. Stories they tell you if you're taking over, running a new organization, that you go and you fire all the people that you want to get rid of on the first day, so that everybody else feels safe that they're going to be able to be around for a while. And
right.
And on that vein, the fact that he went into the NLRB and fired the general counsel and the deputy general counselor, I thought, for me as a labor guy, was an incredible sign that he's going to be aggressive. Now, the Republicans are screaming because this isn't how things have been done in the past. But I think post-Trump or, you know, 3AT after Trump, we're in a brave new world.
Well, yes, I think in the National Labor Relations Board, that was a big sign. In the consumer, you know, side of things, that was another, you know, big sign with his, you know, appointment there. And so I think it shows something. And also on a sense of continuity, Janet Yellen going from Fed Reserve into the Treasury, and then, you know, on the day before, she's testifying that, well, wait a minute, we're not going to mess with interest rates. We're not going to take them up. So that was also a sense of a continuity, too.
Yeah. No, I'm hopeful. You know, I'm guardedly optimistic that, you know, we get through this impeachment process, which I guess the articles will come out on Monday. Let's start with that. Do you think that's a mistake?
It was a huge mistake of the process of what they did, in my opinion, humble opinion. I mean, it can come out all right, but what baffles me, I guess, Rick, is, you know, the House impeached and then, you know, sat on it to transmit it, And I know what they were doing. They were doing that to wait till Schumer got a deal with McConnell. And in my mind, I sort of think, why? You know, now it's moved to February 8th. I mean, it's going to be over with. I understand that. I just think it could have been, should have been done, you know, quicker.
And I said this from the beginning. You know, I'm struggling with my belief that this should have been long over with. I want immediate, swift justice. And then there's the other part of it, of me going, well, maybe we should hold off a little bit. And as all of these criminals that we arrest around the country, it comes out, you know, how tied into these militia groups and how tied in they are to Trump, that maybe this story, you know, gets bigger. I'm kind of in that space where I'm not 100% sure on either side.
And then, of course, you know, as time goes on, even though it's a short period of time, you know, people start to reflect differently, you know, et cetera. But here is the, and maybe I'm going to be wrong here. I'm just saying if February the 8th, it, you know, begins the official process, of course, Monday you're going to have the arguments presented, but February the 8th, we go into there, and it takes a few more days after that, and you're into, let's say, the 12th or something. And how much does the media then begin to have this dominate? And it just needs to be over with one way or the other. And then Biden, you know, Biden's there. So I just thought it should have went faster.
In my opinion. I agree with you on that front because I don't want this chewing up a bunch of time into the
right.
Do you think he's going to be convicted? Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't know. You know, normally I love to predict things. I make predictions. I don't know. It depends on, you know, what people are starting to say. The numbers are starting to run upwards of people saying he should be convicted. That's running up, you know, the poll numbers. It has a lot of influence on senators. Will something be said by Trump that's, you know, of course it's quiet now, but that is outrageous? Will something else come out by that time? I don't know.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm definitely not in the category of, you know, he's not going to be. I think it could be 50-50.
Yeah, you need 17 Republicans, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
I keep looking at that number going, wow, that's a lot of them.
It's a stretch. It's a hill, but, you know, we'll have to see what happens. I mean, if you make me bet tonight, I don't think so. But again, I'm, you know, very undecided on it. There's a lot of factors out here. And then you never know which direction McConnell finally goes.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, you said a second ago that McConnell and Schumer, you know, came up with an agreement. Mm-hmm. I kind of got the sense that you were like, you know, why are you asking for an agreement? Was Schumer mistaken here? Is there a way that he could have steamrolled this process?
Yes, because it starts technically if there's no agreement. So therefore, when McConnell said, well, you know, Chuck, I want 2 weeks, you know, then Chuck could say, well, hey, Mitch, how about we give you 4 days? I just think it may show civility, but I'm not sure that's needed. So I was a little surprised. I had predicted that Schumer would be more hardball on this one and reduce the time element.
Yeah, I think you give I don't have a real high opinion of Chuck Schumer. You know, I just don't.
Well, part of the problem with Schumer, on a personal level, I never have, in a sense, for a multitude of reasons, especially, frankly, in the House, his Wall Street approach was,
yep,
you know,
and that's my problem.
Like a vacuum cleaner, we used to call him when it came to Wall Street, you know, money. But I just think sometimes Schumer, he's old school like McConnell, and the bottom line is, their majority leadership is more important than the institution itself. So I've always felt that, and that applies to McConnell too.
Yeah, I'd like to see him be more aggressive. I'm hoping the best for him. I'm hoping he steers the ship in the right direction. I've got,
sure.
I'm hoping, and I'm behind him. You know, let's get that done. But I'd like to see him learn to drive the steamroller a little bit better.
Right. Maybe this is an isolated case. He wants to get this done. Doesn't want a ton of damage. And then he's got, you know, see how he handles the rest of the agenda. And that's going to be, you know, very important because you're going to have a couple of Democrats that could say no, and then, of course, you might have a couple of Republicans that could say yes. Very interesting.
Yeah. Now, yesterday, the letter had come to Chris Coons, the ethics chairman, seeking to expel or censure Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz. And there seems to be a pretty growing movement of people who want to see expulsions. Do you see that happening on any vein at this moment?
I don't see expulsions happening unless they can directly link beyond the fact that we all know these people, in the Senate led people on, unlike the fact that, I'm just trying to point out, they could have said, I'm just trying to point out election irregularities, which is what happened in 2005 with Stephanie Tubbs Jones, the late congresswoman from Cleveland. But they took it to another complete different level, telling people, come on, here we go, we can do it. Then the president says, go get the vice president, he can do it. So that in itself could tend to lead to censorship. I don't think expulsion, but it could lead to censorship. Right now, you can bet that they're laying low on trying to make a lot of comments of what they did.
Yeah, I mean, but they say in the 14th Amendment, there a lot of people are pointing out the part in the 14th Amendment that no person shall hold office if they've been part of an insurrection, and they're,
right.
I mean, the language is pretty clear.
Yeah. Oh yes, and then on the other side of it, I used to tell people this: you have to be very careful who you put into the Congress, because technically, you can go to the floor of the House and Senate and say any single thing you want about anybody, and it doesn't have to be true, and you have immunity on the floor. That's the other side of this thing. It can be, you can stand there and say, I think the following five people are drug dealers, and they can't sue you for any wrongdoing. It's a fine line, but this is a little bit more specific about insurrection. If it was another topic and they were outrageous, you'd say nothing will happen. But this one, there could be a pattern which would lead to the Ethics Committee doing some type of censorship.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. And I've got great hopes. I'm hopeful that now there's an adult in charge and some of the wheels of our government are back to rolling again. And we start getting this pandemic under control by doing things.
That's the big deal, too, with Biden, the pandemic,
Yep. And look, I mean, his executive orders on day one of, centralizing distribution, setting up testing sites, setting up some vaccination sites across the country, getting federal employees into this. And, I said, back when Trump was saying we're going to use the military, I'm going, hell, if you can hold a bayonet, you can hold a needle. Let's get people given shots. It's not that hard.
Sure. And it's going to be important for Biden, number one, on the pandemic, because obviously the rollout hasn't been real successful. It's going like snails. So this is a chance for them, starting Wednesday, to really accelerate this thing, and that in itself helps a lot. Not only people's health, their life, but also confidence in the economy.
Yep. If we can get things turned around by late spring, early summer, where life starts getting back to normal, got a good shot of getting things done.
Sure.
Good stuff. Bob, as always, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Seriously, I mean, if we can reopen come summertime and this 100 days of wearing masks and doing the 100,000 doses in 100 days, 100 million doses in 100 days, maybe we can get more people vaccinated. We can get through this and on the other side, rebuild our economy and rebuild our infrastructure and all the stuff that needs to happen. I'm hopeful. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.